Okay, I'd like to call the June meeting of the Health Commission to order. And the first order of business is to review the minutes. We all received the minutes in the mail. And if there's no changes, I'd like to ask for it to be approved. Do I hear a second?
I second.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
All right. Minutes are approved. The next part of the evening is public comment, and this is a time when persons desiring to speak on issues other than scheduled items that are within the scope of the Health Commission may come up and speak. So any public members or any public comment? Yes.
I see we have the GOP now.
You do. That's what I said.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Peter Keith. I reside in the Wasna Valley, the eastern edge of Arroyo Grande. This is my colleague, Lynn Schultz, who also is a resident of the Wasna Valley. And we're here this evening to talk to you about the potential for oil extraction, in reality, road tar, from the Wasna Valley, a proposal that's been made by Australian Oil Company and its many subsidiaries. I'd like to take a moment of your time, if I may, and read a somewhat brief statement. And I'd like to read it into the record, and I'd like to have your attention regarding the EIR that will be coming out, and that I'll explain that in my comments.
And if I could interrupt, it is limited to 3 minutes.
I'll make it in 3 minutes.
Thank
then.
You.
All right. I represent the Wasna Valley Association, a community group in South County that is participating in the EIR process for a proposed oil production facility in the remote Wasna Valley. Next week, the draft EIR will be released, and the HVA, that's the Wasna Valley Association, requests that the Health Commission and their offices please carefully evaluate the comment and comment on the draft EIR. The public comment period will last only 45 days, so time is critical. This project has the potential to increase natural gas, combustion products, dust, odors, and toxic substances into the air. We are all familiar with the smell of Price Canyon and its impacts on air quality in Edna Valley and the city of Pismo Beach. Unlike those places, Wasna does not benefit from ocean breezes and large exchanges of air. Instead, Wasna is a pocket valley with a strong temperature inversion layer as cold air settles to the valley floor each night, meaning it traps those particulates. This inversion layer will trap all airborne particulates and pollutants, which could represent a health hazard to the valley residents. In addition, heavy truck traffic along 7 miles of dirt roads will put particulate dust into the air, which could further affect the respiratory health of residents. And I'm almost done. Finally, this project carries risk of contamination of the drinking water aquifer in Wasna Valley. Given the recent discovery of the use of hydraulic fracturing techniques being used in Santa Barbara County, the lack of any government regulations on fracking, the exemption from the Clean Water Act given to all oil companies in their use of fracking, and the documented hazard that the practice of fracking poses to drinking water aquifers, it seems impossible for the county to ensure that our drinking water aquifer will not be contaminated. Such contamination obviously represents a health risk to the 400-plus residents in the area. We ask that you examine the draft EIR very carefully in regards to the health hazards posed by this project to the residents of the Wasna Valley. That EIR, the draft EIR, will be coming out quite soon. We hope you will read it, we hope you will comment on it, and we hope you will take a position on it, because our lives, safety, and health depends upon it. Lynn, do you have a word before? 3 minutes starts again?
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Thank you. I just want to say that we are feeling it is a very important, for one reason, because the you can choose not to look at something if it's in your area and so forth, but you can't choose not to breathe the air in the area. And we have some concerns about similar companies choosing to ignore the best practices and prefer to pay fines for their poor use of the land and knowing that that can happen in spite of what the rules may be, and also considering the air that we breathe. And of course, we all know we can't live without water, especially in this climate, that these concerns are for probably a very small amount of energy extracted. And again, encouraging you to just look it over very carefully in all its aspects. And we thank you for your time and consideration.
I'd like to close with one thing, if I may, Mr. Chair. And that is that I think this county has done a good deal to support the generation of energy for this country. We are one of 33 counties in the entire United States that supports a nuclear power station. We extract oil out of Price Canyon, and we've just approved a rather large solar panel facility, and another one is on the cusp of being approved. How much more? Are we really willing to violate the sanctity and the healthful cleanliness and charm and beauty of a small valley in this county to extract road tar? Thank you.
I have a question for you, if I could.
Yes, sir.
When will the EIR?
Next week.
Okay, and how will it be released?
It'll be released in a draft form, and I believe it will be released on a CD as well. Tracy, may I ask, one of your panel members also lives in Wasna Valley. Am I correct in that, Tracy? Is it a DVD or a CD that is coming out? Not that I guess that makes a whole lot of difference.
It's a CD.
CD. It wouldn't be a DVD.
CD, and it'll be out.
Hey, I'm an old guy. I don't know.
Released on Friday, but out for public viewing on Monday.
Will it be available online? Do you know?
Yes, I think it will, and I would be happy to get a CD for anybody who would like one to read.
It's a 1,000-page yes. document with 7,000 pages of backup information.
Yeah, and I think what is prudent to do, and I think this is where your question is leading, is how will you access it? Mm-hmm. We will be sure that each of you has access to it so you can read the executive summary or the entire packet if you so like. But this is an extremely critical issue for this county, and most certainly for the residents of Wasna Valley.
Thank you.
Any questions?
Thank you very much.
Well, you had one down at the end.
Now you can hear me. When you say road tar, you're getting the information about the kind of petroleum that they're going to be extracting from a report that you've seen, or
the historical evidence demonstrates that that's the consistency of any oil that's in the ground in the Wasna area. That's a geological fact. The manner of extraction of that is still up in the air. And all of that will be examined by the EIR. But this project started out with 4 wells and a small amount of limited leases. It's now grown to thousands and thousands of acres, and it's also grown in the number of wells. And of course, they can do lateral and drilling as well. And a lot of property owners don't own the mineral rights. That becomes a bit of a problem. And we're not quite sure what the real scope of this whole project is and where they really want to go with it. It has grown exponentially. Every time we talk to them or they talk to the community, it's something different. I could be, if this weren't a public environment, I would be much more specific in my concerns. I think we have to keep it on the facts and away from emotional issues, and I think that's what you'd appreciate as well.
It's interesting to note that the Air Pollution Control Board has been quite interested and involved in the project already.
I hope I came close to answering your question. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for taking the time.
Is there any further public comment? Okay, the next is a presentation of the health risks of alcohol, and I'd like to invite Jeff Hurton.
Thank you very much. So I'd like to thank you very much for asking me to come. I met Susan Warren at a seminar that we put on at the Vets Hall about 3 weeks ago on the health risks of alcohol, and it was presented to the public and to a great many of healthcare professionals who attended. And Susan heard my talk on health risks and asked if I'd come and talk to the Health Commission, and I said, by all means. And we're going to get there we go. All right, so I brought my friend. I don't go anywhere without my friend, and it's not a Republican caucus. This is Sobe, who's a female African elephant, and she is the elephant in the room that you've heard of, and for many of us, alcohol is the elephant in the room that we never talk about, and hopefully tonight we're going to talk about it, and we're going to learn more about that elephant before we get finished this evening. So, about the health risks of alcohol. You weren't lied to. You just didn't get all the facts. Everybody opens the paper, and wine's good for your heart, and you live longer if you drink moderately. But I'm going to share some facts with you tonight that don't show up on the first page of the paper. They don't show up on the back page of the paper. They never get into the paper. And I'm also going to share with you some statistics that are rather frightening. Mark Twain said that there were three ways to lie. There were lies, there were damn lies, and there were statistics. And unfortunately, when it comes to alcohol, you've been dealt with a lot of statistics that are pretty hard to understand, and the definitions of which are very vague. We're going to talk about that this evening. So what I want to share with you tonight is that you do not have to be alcoholic to die from the effects of alcohol. The fact is, do you have my illustrations? Oh, good. Okay. 2.5 million people die every year of alcohol in the world. That ranks above HIV, which we spend billions of dollars for in Africa. It ranks above tuberculosis, and it ranks above war. It turns out to be 125,000 deaths per year in the United States. Compare that with 500,000 deaths from heart disease. So you can see we're in the ballpark, significantly in the ballpark. Alcohol is the number one cause of death in men worldwide between the ages of 15 and 56. It was judged as the most harmful drug, including all drugs, to the user and to those people around them by a study that was published in Lancet, a very prestigious British journal, last October. 10% of men and 5% of women in the United States are alcoholic. 30% of drinkers binge, meaning that they drink to excess once a month. The really frightening thing, especially if you live in our community and you see the headlines, is that 25% of all alcoholics are teenagers. And the fact of the matter is that the earlier you begin drinking, the more likely you are to become alcoholic. The cost to California every year is $38 billion, $11 billion of which comes from the general fund. And couldn't Cal Poly and Cuesta College use some of that money, and some of the schools use that money to better education rather than to stem the tide of alcohol? So what's the problem with alcohol? Why is it such a problem? Well, first of all, it's a very small molecule. This is the molecule alcohol, ethyl alcohol, and it's very small. It's extremely soluble, so it goes through cell membranes extremely easily, and it goes through all the cell membranes in the body. So it's virtually everywhere in the body without any reservations. Oh, could you back me up? The last line on that, it doesn't show very well, but the last statement says it's accessible. It is so accessible, and that's a huge problem. Not only is it small, soluble, gets through cell membranes, but you virtually can get it anywhere in the market, in the drugstore, in the convenience store, in the pharmacy. So what are the real issues? Well, first of all, alcohol is a poison. We'll talk about that. Secondly, it causes addiction. We're not going to talk about that tonight. Susan asked me if I'd just talk about the health problems. I'm fascinated with the mechanism of addiction with alcohol, but I don't have time to discuss it this evening. But I'd be more than happy to if you want to invite me back to talk about some of the issues that we don't have time to talk about tonight. My issue is that it causes multiple health problems, many of which are totally unknown by the public. Okay, so first of all, alcohol is a poison. It is toxic to human cells. Many cells in the body are killed by certain concentrations of alcohol. There's a varying tolerance to the effects of alcohol depending upon the cell type. Nerve tissue is much more sensitive than muscle, than ligament, than tendon, than connective tissue. But again, it's toxic to all cells. So this is a famous physician in the Middle Ages. His name was Paracelsus, and he was sort of a rock star in the Middle Ages, and he's famous for many of his arrogant remarks. He was thrown out of the Italian Academy of Sciences because he was just too... One of his middle names was Bombastus. He had like five names, and one of the third or fourth name was Bombastus, and he definitely was. But he's famous for one thing that we remember him for, and that is the concept of the dose. Here's his quote: "All things are poison, and nothing is without poison. Only the dose permits something not to be poisonous." His concept was that a small amount of a certain chemical had a different effect than a large amount. And you and I think about that, and it's self-evident. It's something that we just take for granted. But back in the Middle Ages, this was a revolutionary concept. And alcohol is a perfect example of the dose-effect relationship. So some examples of the concept of dose. My great-grandfather was a physician in the Dakotas in the 1890s, and he used to carry a little bottle of strychnine with him. And they used it to bring people out of coma. It's a very stimulating. It's like methamphetamine. It wakes people up. Of course, you and I all know it because you go down and buy rat poison and it's strychnine because it kills rats. Why? Because it's simply a bigger dose. They go into grand mal seizures, they don't breathe, and they die. Digitalis, one of our very favorite cardiac medicines. If you double the dose of digitalis, people die of fatal arrhythmias. I won't go through the other ones, but all of these other things are examples of the dose-effect relationship, and alcohol is a perfect example of that. Unfortunately, we all had the very unfortunate experience of witnessing and living through a trauma that most of us will never forget when we lost this young man at Cal Poly several years ago. His blood alcohol was between 0.39 and 0.45%. The legal limit for driving is 0.08. So here's your brain, and this is where I'll need my pointer. So here is the brain. This is the thing that makes us human. This is the cerebral cortex, this massive piece of the brain here. So when let's say that we're just trying experimentally to get someone really drunk, and we're just having them drink shots of tequila, all right? So after a couple shots of tequila, this person gets to 0.1% blood alcohol. Remember now, 0.08 is the legal limit, so this is a little over the legal limit. And this is where the alcohol is affecting the cerebral cortex. It is affecting specifically the prefrontal cortex, which is where our judgment is, where our impulse control is. So this is where we start to get pretty happy. We don't remember the tax bill that we have to pay tomorrow. We don't remember the problem that we have to see that teacher at school, one of the kids is having a problem. And basically... Would you back me up? I didn't touch the... Oh, okay. All right, so at 0.1%, we've inhibited the cerebral cortex, and we're feeling really good. This is the happy. This is that nice, sweet spot that a lot of drinkers like when they get to that spot. That's like where they'd like to stay. It's just happy-go-lucky. But we keep powering these shots of tequila, and at 0.2, after two or three more shots, we now begin to affect the cerebellum, which is the balance center, which is at the base of the brain here in the back of the brainstem. And this is where we get unsteady. This is where we would fail a field sobriety test because we've inhibited the cerebellum. We've inhibited the balance center. But we keep right on going. And as we drink more, we now get to 0.3, and we are inhibiting the brainstem. The brainstem is where all the vital functions of the brain live. So now the center of consciousness is being affected, and this person is now falling down. This person is passing out. This person is borderline coma at 0.3. But we're in a garage with a bunch of pledges, and the actives left us a whole lot of booze, and they said, when we get back, this all better be gone. And so we just keep drinking. And so we get to 0.4, and at 0.4, the alcohol reaches the brainstem, which is where all the vital functions are. Temperature control, blood pressure, heart, respirations. And the first and the most critical thing that happens is people stop breathing. Now, I was an intern at LA County, it was like the MASH unit, and we had people all night long that came in with blood alcohols at 0.4, 0.45. No problem. You intubate them, you put them on a respirator, and you wait it out, they metabolize that alcohol, and they wake up the next morning. But there was no one there with an awareness that this was a problem and this could be a problem to get somebody to an emergency room where those emergency services were available. And that's the awareness that we'd love to get to our young people, is how incredibly toxic this stuff is when you're drinking hard and when you're drinking alcohol that's high concentration. So not only do we have a problem with the alcohol being poisonous, but then we can make it more poisonous if we add some recreational drugs. The favorite right now and probably the worst offender is OxyContin. You got 4 stars with OxyContin. I know of 3 deaths within the last 2 years in this community from OxyContin and alcohol. One was a student, went to Chico State from San Luis High. He was going to graduate. He finished his finals, went out drinking with the boys, and he died. And instead of going to his graduation, his parents were planning a memorial service. And when they tested his blood alcohol was only 0.19, but he had OxyContin. And OxyContin and alcohol work together as far as causing respiratory arrest. Lorazepam, which is Ativan, and it's that same family as Valium, that's another one of the big players in this whole problem. And there's very little awareness in the youth community of how toxic these things are. Another one of the deaths from OxyContin was a bartender who was playing drinking games, and he went to the restroom and didn't come back. And they went into the restroom, and he was dead. And he had OxyContin on board also. So that's part of why I give these talks, is I'm trying to educate people, especially the young people, about these issues. Okay, so now we're going to talk about the health risks, that pure and simple, physical risks of alcohol. We're going to talk about cancer, osteoporosis, allergies, insomnia, GERD, which is like heartburn, immune suppression, hepatitis leading to cirrhosis, pancreatitis, heart disease, obesity, diabetes, neuropathy, hypoglycemia, dementia, high blood pressure, and stroke. And these are all diseases that are scientifically proven to be caused by alcohol. So we're going to start out with cancer. Alcohol causes 9 different kinds of cancer. Most of those are in the GI tract, the mouth, throat, esophagus, stomach, colon and rectum, and the liver, the pancreas, the breast, and the prostate. And we're going to go through these quickly, and I'll show you some evidence of the causation of these cancers by alcohol. Okay, first of all, is alcohol carcinogenic? Everybody know that term, carcinogenic, to give rise to cancer? And the answer is no, alcohol is not carcinogenic. But the first breakdown of alcohol, the body and the enzymes in your liver break alcohol down to acetaldehyde. And acetaldehyde is carcinogenic. So this happens principally in the liver, so it's not surprising that liver cancer is common with alcohol. But it also occurs in the GI tract because we have bacteria in our mouth, in our throat, stomach, colon, and the bacteria have the same enzyme that break the alcohol down to acetaldehyde. And so literally the cells of that part of the body are being constantly bathed with acetaldehyde, which is a carcinogen. Not surprising then that all those GI cancers are caused by alcohol. Okay, here's cancer of the mouth, squamous cell cancer of the mouth. You can see that you can't because we don't have a little too much light in here, but there's a little patch right here. There's a little white patch on the inside of the gums. The risk factors for cancer of the mouth are tobacco, alcohol, and poor oral hygiene. And yet you will see people that never smoked and that have impeccable oral hygiene that get mouth cancer, and they get it from alcohol. I had a famous patient that I was very close to who was a winemaker, and he spent a lot of time tasting wine. Never smoked in his life, had impeccable oral hygiene, but he got very diffuse squamous cell cancer on both sides of the inside of his mouth, and he ended up dying of it with only the risk factor of alcohol. I have another friend who was an all-American high jumper in college, and he never smoked and led a really clean lifestyle, except he drank an awful lot of beer, and he died of squamous cell cancer of the mouth. Another cancer, here's one on the tongue. Here's another white patch on the inside of the mouth. Throat cancer, Michael Douglas has throat cancer. He smoked a lot of cigars, and he drank a lot, and he's dead. When he got the cancer and did his radiation, he said, well, he said, I drank and smoked a lot. He owned up to it. But we know now that this is a major cause of throat cancer. Esophagus cancer, a little further down in the GI tract, very commonly these will, the first symptom is that the person can't swallow because the esophageal cancer is blocking the esophagus. Or it'll erode into a large blood vessel and cause a very serious hemorrhage. A good friend of mine about 10 or 12 years ago here in town had first symptom was a massive GI bleed. And they scoped him, and he had this big cancer in his esophagus. It was so big they couldn't operate on it. And they life-flighted him. He was so low on blood, they life-flighted him to Stanford and got his blood back up, and they treated the cancer with radiation because they couldn't operate on it. And he'd lasted about 4 months. And he was not a smoker. He did smokeless tobacco. He chewed. But he also was a pretty heavy drinker. Here's a large esophageal. You can see that obstruction of this. This is the esophagus. This is, obstruction of this would be a pretty common phenomenon with esophageal cancer. Stomach cancer. My father died of stomach cancer. My father was a very high-functioning alcoholic. And his demise was caused from stomach cancer, and certainly his drinking was contributory to that. Colon and rectal cancer, again, the GI tract, we're breaking down alcohol to acetaldehyde, and we're causing mutations of those cells. Here's a cancer of the colon. The colon is like a hose that's been opened up, and here's the cancer. Here's a cancer. Here are two premalignant polyps, as you know, colon cancer is on the increase in this country. Here's a nice serpiginous colon cancer. Liver cancer. We talked about, because the liver breaks down alcohol to acetaldehyde, liver cancer would be fairly common because there's a lot of acetaldehyde in the liver. And the fact is that it's a common accompaniment of alcoholic liver disease. And if you have hepatitis C, it's a double whammy. Fairly good friend of mine went to Vietnam as a GI and participated in some IV drugs there, got Hep C. When he got back, he became extremely successful financially. Had lived in Montecito. He had an island in the Caribbean. He just had everything. But he kept drinking pretty hard. He went in to see his internist, and his liver enzymes were up, and the internist said, you know, you shouldn't be drinking. You've had hepatitis C. And he said, really? And so he cut back for a while and then kind of went back to his drinking. And he was windsurfing in the Caribbean off his island and thought he had the flu. The next day got really sick. And within a week, he'd been diagnosed with liver cancer that was contributed to by his hep C and by his heavy drinking. Breast cancer. This is an untreated breast cancer. My wife and I did a medical mission to the Solomon Islands 3 years ago, and this was one of seven breast cancers that we saw there and our surgeons operated on. One of the latest things to be publicly acclaimed is the fact that breast cancer is definitely caused or contributed to by alcohol. And there's still a lot of people in the general public that are not aware of this. The fact of the matter is that for every ounce of alcohol that a woman consumes per day, it increases her risk of breast cancer by 5%. Breast cancer is more common in cultures that drink. It's less common in the Muslim countries where they don't drink. It's epidemic in modern societies as they begin to enjoy alcohol. Famous study out of Marin County, they found a group of ladies up there that had a 60% increase in breast cancer. And the epidemiologist went in and looked at these group of ladies, and they said, what's different from these women than, you know, women in the general population? And can anybody guess what that was? Marin County? It was wine. They were all wine drinkers. They had, all were wine drinkers. And I'm not implicating wine per se. I'm implicating alcohol. One of my pet peeves is that a lot of women give up taking estrogens because of the risk of breast cancer. And that's still very controversial. There's only one form of estrogen that's definitely been associated, and it's questionable whether it's, you know, firmly established that it's caused, you know, has a causation of breast cancer. Many of the estrogens, it's very, very controversial. And yet, alcohol is not controversial at all, and the same women that won't take estrogen are more than happy to drink a few glasses of wine. I have a problem with that. The newest and latest is last year's published at Harvard. It looks at their alumni every few years for various things, and last year's study was a study on prostate cancer, and they found a 60% increase in prostate cancer in men who drank hard liquor, not beer and wine, but hard liquor. And they think that it's not the alcohol itself, but it's the some of the volatile benzenes and toluenes and things that come off in the distillation process. Pancreas cancer, the evidence is there, but it's circumstantial. It's not definitely proven. But alcohol induces mutations in a gene called KRAS, and KRAS mutations are very commonly seen in pancreas cancer. So not only does alcohol cause cancer, but alcohol can facilitate the spread of cancer. Does everybody know that word, metastasis? Meta means to change, stasis means place. So to change place or to move or to spread is when a cancer moves from its primary spot to a distant site. Melanoma starts in the skin. When it spreads to the lymph nodes, to the brain, to the liver, to bones, it has metastasized. That process is prevented by a vigorous immune system. And there are cells in your body which prevent the cancers from spreading. There's a cell in your body called an NKT cell, natural killer T cell. And the natural killer T cell literally attacks cancer cells and kills them. It can tell your cell, your DNA match from the cancer cells, and it kills cancer cells. So vigorous NKT cells will prevent metastasis. Well, the bad news is that alcohol decreases NKT cells. So it actually facilitates cancer spreading. That's an NKT cell. They literally roll across the cell, and they can tell the exact DNA that's inside that cell. And if it doesn't match with the host DNA, it attacks it. If you take mice and you give them artificial... or not artificial, but if you inject them with melanoma cells and you put half of them on an alcohol diet and the other half on a regular diet, the ones on the alcohol diet die more frequently and quicker than the mice on the alcohol-free diet. Okay, here's one that you may not have heard of. Alcohol is a major cause of osteoporosis. Osteoporosis is epidemic in our society, in our culture. 50% of women 50 years old have osteopenia. 25% of them have osteoporosis. What is osteoporosis? It's the loss of calcium from the bone, which weakens the bone. So how does alcohol do that? Well, first of all, it's a diuretic. So it increases urine flow. And it, in increasing the urine flow, the calcium and the magnesium that are in the urine are not reabsorbed like they normally are by the release. Increases. blacks as you should, especially disease. Parallel. Proven that alcohol. It doesn't. Varicose. Totally. process of in the of heart failure. Get very very, very obese, your insulin doesn't work very well because the fat dilutes it and it just doesn't function very well. You end up with what's called type 2 diabetes or insulin-resistant diabetes. Alcohol is more hypoglycemic. Gets low. Walls. judgment. Alcohol was been around. Solutions. Follow the rest. On the penis.
This kind of
tar. They
alcohol.
It's a side. Year two. Fights and how hard time.
Thank you for coming.
Thank you. Well, such a thing. In the your reception. Your air. Also, you know, like my- So it's just like clinically, I'm not the bikes and all.
Just our alcohol.
Counselor in the arc it. You know, if you look at the going to make people
in the county. Concern within infection. Whether that individual they aren't able. Example, you have increase the risk. Meaning that County. That we increase. So with our first line. safety net. Children. For the county. People don't realize. Understand. A caregiver. Largest. Come to the tastes. This is my
parents.
Programs go. Potential. That I can answer.
That's one. Of staff.
Dental school. level.
My
in ways available. Centers. Certainly just were flu vaccines are the school. Is a county.
would.
Of the position.
Email.
Reduce fund. Dialogue. complex.
Follow-up. The time.
apparently.
Continue.
Heard tonight.
Thank you.